You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, November 25th, 2009. This is episode 107, Feasting on RSS Feeds and Grits. It is time again for another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast, a podcast where we explore the intersection between technology and ministry. And my podcasting partner, as usual, is joining us from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. I had my grits this morning. I'm ready to go.
You had grits.
You ever eat grits for breakfast?
When we lived in South Carolina, we had grits all the time. In fact, my daughter still looks for, my oldest daughter, who remembers most of our time in South Carolina, remembers having grits and enjoys them. The other two, not so much.
Yeah.
So how do you like your grits?
I like them with butter and salt. I said I always get comments from the checkout people at the grocery store when I buy them because it's such a novelty that someone would actually buy grits in Minnesota.
Well, good stuff. That's what we were having trouble finding a lot of selection here in Milwaukee. Down in South Carolina, there were aisles of grits. Different flavors. You could have,
Heaven, huh?
That's right. You could have any kind of grits you wanted, cheese and grits, or stuff that you'd pour syrup on, maple syrup and grits. Here, I think you just get grits. Am I saying that right? Well, grits.
I think the two syllables are coming through perfectly.
Grits. Okay, I got it. I have a terrible Southern accent, even though I was down there for a little bit. Nothing. I mean, I defer to you in any Southern drawl questions, right?
I think that's how I made my podcast breakthrough, Martin, was my Southern accent, led the way. So
that gives a little bit of style, a little bit of flair. So
there you go.
All right. What's that?
Are you heading out on Black Friday?
I am
heading out on Black Friday looking for electronics, or
I am not. I try and be a home buddy on Black Friday. How about yourself?
No, nothing really floats my boat this year. I think I'll be staying home as well.
Okay. By the way, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Some of you may be listening to this post-Thanksgiving, some pre-Thanksgiving, but great week, wonderful week to focus on everything that the Lord has given us. And I know you and I, Sally, pray before the show, and one of a piece of our prayer this morning was just Thanksgiving for being able to do this, being able to talk about technology, some of the things that we love, and especially how it relates to ministry. So with that intro, what kind of tech are we going to talk about today?
Well, today's show is kind of dedicated to RSS technology, or really simple syndication. And we've got a brand new page on the Wells Tech Wiki that we've dedicated to that particular technology and how you can use RSS feeds personally on your church or school website, and how you can even create your own RSS feeds.
We have to apologize to our listeners ahead of time. Sally is having some, I think, some bandwidth issues with Skype and with internet in general. So if she sounds a little bit Max Headroom-y, that would be the reason. So, Sally, we should probably talk a little bit about why RSS at this point. You mentioned that we've built a new page, but one of the reasons that we did build a new page is we've changed all of our many of our RSS feeds with the migration of Wells.net. On Wells.net, we essentially hard-coded all of our RSS feeds, and with the transition, we figured, we came to the conclusion, I should say, that that's probably not the best approach. So we transferred all of our feeds to FeedBurner, and then some of the feeds that we had essentially went away because we weren't using them, or we felt people weren't using them. So we've consolidated. We've got a nice page now, and you've been busy on the wiki not just with the links to the, you know, the Synod's RSS feeds, but redoing the how-to.
That's right. And I think, you know, if anybody's interested in RSS or wants to share the concept of RSS, for me, a great starting point is to watch the Common Craft video, RSS in Plain English, because they just real simply in about 3 minutes time give you a good understanding of the power of RSS. And, you know, Martin, I think you and I both attended a conference way back in 2004 where somebody was talking about RSS and how it was going to change things. And after that, we started incorporating it into the Welsh.net website. And we've definitely seen the power of that. We've seen many, many congregations take advantage of things like our daily devotions, our daily prayers, our daily Bible readings, and incorporating those directly into their congregational websites and allowing their content to be regularly updated without essentially any work on their behalf. Mm. So RSS is just a wonderful tool for syndicating that information out. You can use it on a personal basis to read across the web, you know, many, many blogs, newspaper sites, things like that include RSS feeds on their site, kind of a given now on the web, and it's just a really great way to put all that together, kind of how I find all the great information that I'm able to share on the Wells Tech podcast is via those RSS feeds.
Mm-hmm. Now, we can probably divvy up our conversation into two parts, the consuming, which you were just getting into, of RSS feeds, and also the producing, which is a little bit geekier. So maybe let's explore a little bit further the consumption side. And I guess I've seen the growth of RSS when it comes to Wells content for a couple reasons. The only way to receive content before RSS was through email, essentially, through a subscription email. And there are people who still use that, but I think the freedom that RSS readers give and the you know, having all your stuff in one place, kind of like the newspaper of the web, is very appealing to people.
Absolutely, and there's lots of flavors of that. Our wiki page gives a starting point, but we'd invite any of our listeners to add their favorite methods for receiving RSS personally on the page as well. We highlighted the fact that you can get them in your browser. Firefox, Internet Explorer, Safari, all the major browsers support RSS subscriptions and being able to access your feeds via your browser. You can also get it integrated right into your email, which is a really nice way to have it delivered to you in a folder type setting with the bolding and things when new things show up. Works with Outlook and Thunderbird, among others, I'm sure. And then a very popular way is to use an RSS reader or a piece of software dedicated to compiling all the RSS feeds for you. And we actually did a show, dedicated a show to that this past summer, a bonus Wells Tech Goodness episode, all about Google Reader, which is a very popular reader. And there are others. So if you're using a different web-based reader or software reader on your desktop or whatever, we'd love to have you add it to our wiki page as well.
Yeah, we've talked about Google Reader in the past, probably ad nauseum for some of our listeners, but I really like it because it's multi-platform. It doesn't matter. It's web-based. Plus, you can get it on the iPhone, and I'm assuming iPod Touch as well.
Yeah, I actually use one called Newsstand.
Oh, okay.
But it's synchronizing with my Google Reader account.
Ah, okay.
And so, yeah, we probably should add a category on here for yourself, mobile devices. We didn't include that on the wiki page, but that's
a good one to add. It's a great experience on the iPhone, and you can do almost everything that you can on the web through Google's iPhone interface. So that is my preferred method. In fact, I was sitting in front of my Google Reader last night. I had 1,000 feeds I had to run through quickly, because I had not visited in a couple days, and that's kind of you got to play catch up once in a while if you haven't been paying attention to your feeds, and then there's some weeding and sorting, and there's different ways to filter. So they've done a nice job with that. But I think all of the feed readers essentially do that at this point, where you can categorize and store them for later reading, whatever. So that's on the consumption side. Another kind of offshoot of that is essentially putting them in a format on your web page. So how would a webmaster use RSS feeds if they wanted to consume the Synod's feeds, for instance?
Well, typically what they're going to do is generate some embed code. Technical mm-hmm. term, it basically means the programming behind the scenes that's going to pull that information from the website, display the headlines, maybe display a bit of the beginning paragraph of the content of that RSS feed. Mm-hmm. And there's several different tools out there. A couple that we recommend on the wiki page are FeedWind and RSS Mix News Wizard, which actually generate that embed code, which could just be pasted right into your HTML of your website to bring the RSS feed onto your web page.
And you get a lot of customization with that too, right? I mean, you can format it. You can say, yeah, I just want an abstract of this many characters. I'd like it to be this font size, those kinds of things.
Colors and that kind of mm-hmm. thing as well.
Yep.
And if you're a Final Web user, you can actually do that right within the Final Web content management system.
Built right in, right.
Mm-hmm. And the RSS feeds from Welse.net are even easier to include in your Final website. So we have a link on our wiki page to a video tutorial specifically for Final Web users.
Yeah, and the Final Web module does not restrict you to Welse.net feed. You could essentially plug in anything that you wanted.
That's right. You just need that feed URL or web address. And those are pretty easy to find. Actually, in today's browsers, when you browse to a page that has a feed, typically a little orange icon is going to light up somewhere on your page. Orange is the color that indicates RSS, and you can grab the feed really easily from there.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Now let's go to the other side, producing feeds. Congregations and schools occasionally do produce their own content, and they may want to syndicate that or allow others to, you know, put it in their reader or put it on their websites. What are some of the tools that would be necessary to do that?
Well, we have a variety in this category. First up, we want to mention that another past Bonus Wells Tech Goodness episode from this past summer, we talked about a way to create custom feeds using delicious tagging. So you might want to go back and listen to that episode if you're looking for a way to tag, say, news articles and things about your congregation or your school. You can create custom RSS feeds of that.
That is fairly easy, and there's good tutorials out there that will give you that information. An RSS feed simply is two parts. You need an XML file, which is the feed, and in that XML file it needs to be properly formatted, and you just put in the feed the instructions that will tell the reader where to find the content. So let's say you've got a web page. It can be any web page on your website that you want to make into a feed, or you want to push through a feed. And your XML file just needs to reference that page and give, you know, a description and a title. And then whoever is subscribed would receive that information when the feed reader, whatever it is that they're using, goes out and looks and says, is there anything new? Is there anything new? And if you want to hand code that, you would just update that same file over and over again with the new pages that you're producing.
Yeah, and actually I found a website called FeedXS, which allows you to paste in. And so it's a step above hand coding mm-hmm. your RSS feed. You paste in your topic and your your paragraph or descriptive text, and it will build the feed for you. And so if you're, you know, producing content, this is an easy way to just produce an XML file in addition to that content.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've produced a feed, you'll need to run it through feedvalidator.org. We have a link to that on the wiki as well. And that'll check your feed to make sure it's got the proper syntax, to make sure feed readers aren't going to bounce it back and say that's a bad RSS feed.
Right.
So just submitting your feed at feedvalidator.org gives you some comfort level that people will actually be able to make use of it.
It still can be a little bit tricky, so you have to be very careful, because XML is a very exacting language, and if you've got something a little bit, use one of my favorite words, wonky, it's not going to display correctly, or you'll see an error message that'll come up when you try to read it in the reader or if you're trying to embed it on a page.
but that feed validator will actually point you directly
to it'll say this is the problem. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
So that's a big help.
Yep.
We have a link to Martin to iTunes and how you can get started submitting your podcast or videocast feeds to iTunes for inclusion there.
Sure.
So once you do that, then you can give people a link directly to your iTunes page.
So ministry applications, don't be fooled into thinking that podcasts have to be like a talk show like the Wellstack podcast. That certainly is a podcastable thing. But when you're talking about iTunes, you're talking about an RSS feed that is audio content. And, you know, like this podcast or many of the things that a congregation would produce on any given week. So that could be a sermon, Bible class, Bible study, worship service, whatever it is, those are all RSS-able, and that's essentially what you're doing to get them into iTunes. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a podcast, although I know some congregations are beginning to create just their own talk kinds of shows as additional content that they feel their members or even prospects might want to listen to.
Yeah, and on the school side of things, Martin, you know, podcasting is a great activity to do with students. Perhaps you focus on a particular study that you're doing, or you do an interview series throughout the school year, that kind of thing. So lots of opportunity there and a great way to engage the students in new technology.
So if you wanted to do a podcast on, say, something like grits, you could easily do that, right?
I'm sure there's plenty to talk about there.
I wonder if there is a grits podcast. I bet there is.
I could
research that. Okay. So that's RSS. If you've got your own ideas or how you're using RSS, or if you have questions, contact us. Let us know what your thoughts are, and we can do some follow-up. RSS is a topic that comes up quite a bit in our conversations. There's all kinds of questions around it, and it's an evolving technology too. So we'd love to hear your feedback. Up next, we are going to play part two of our interview with Wells Director of Communications, Joel Hochmuth. He talks to us a little bit more about the launch of Wells.net and some communication strategies in general about what the Synod is focusing on these days with their web presence. So here's our conversation, part two, with Joel Hochmuth. Now, along with that, Joel, we have launched a new logo on the site, and the site kind of matches the color theme, the reds and the blues. What was behind that? Why did we think we needed a new logo?
Well, I think in terms of reaching out, it's more than just a logo. And I hate starting the conversation. That's one of the things I try to do is not start the conversation on the logo, because then it becomes a focal point.
Right.
It really was an element of an overall sort of identity initiative that we've been conducting, which was we've been looking to sort of revamp, you know, who we are in our message and how we convey ourselves to the outside world. And really sort of focus the message on the positive aspects of being a child of God and being a group of believers, as opposed to having to fend off some of the negative stereotypes, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. So really, this is just simply an element of an overall effort to really put our church body out there in the positive, most positive light possible. One of the things we obviously, looked at was, okay, well, what is our current imaging?
Mm-hmm.
And what we had currently really was a product of the 70s.
Right.
And if you're looking to move your church body forward and your imaging forward, then that also has to be updated as well.
Sure.
So we looked at any number of different designs. This is the one we decided on that we were most pleased with. There was some obvious symbolism there about getting the word, spreading the word of God out to the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
We introduced a new color, which was this sort of dark red, which, you know, you can take that any number of different ways. Some people have interpreted that to be Christ's blood. Some people have interpreted that to be, well, the color of the Holy Spirit. Take it however you want.
Sure.
You know, we weren't trying to be that specific. But what it does do, that giving us that red gives us a whole new color palette to work mm-hmm. with that we didn't have before. And as you know, in the web design, we make use of that liberally, that whole new color scheme and that sort of thing. And I think that's really what makes the website much more attractive than it had been.
Right. So everybody's got to change their church signs.
Yeah, well, we've been telling everybody with the church signs to, you know, as your, you know, that doesn't necessarily have to be your top priority. But one thing we have done, though, is, you know, made this available where we're expecting to see the change you know, more rapidly is really on the websites,
right,
of all the congregations. There, it's much easier to swap out. Mm-hmm. And really, in today's day and age, that is your first introduction to mm-hmm. the world around you. If you try, whether as a synod, whether as an individual congregation, people get to know organizations. It's just like, it's just become second nature now that you go on the web, let's check out their website,
right,
find out who they are.
Right.
And so that's why our emphasis really has been, let's get that, you know, for instance, the logo and the new imaging, that sort of thing, let's get that on your electronic presence, mm-hmm. on your church signs that can follow. We'll worry about that later.
Right. Yeah. Over the weekend, my brother-in-law down in Florida as a pastor just showed me a picture of their new church sign with the old logo. The sign had been created, I think, 2 days before the new logo came out. So they've got to live with that. But that's all right. It'll still get the job done.
Yeah.
So they have something to look forward to. Where else are we going to see this logo? Are we going to see redesigns and color palettes on Forward in Christ and different things like that?
Too? Yeah, we're reworking. Yeah, we're reworking all of the print material. And so our goal is January 1st, you'll see in Forward in Christ a whole new design there.
Mm-hmm.
The Together newsletter, for instance, will have a new design. Still trying to figure out the exact launch date of that, but
mm-hmm.
that'll be in the near future.
Sure.
And then we're also revamping all of the print communications coming out of the Synod Administration Building, whether it be through the former Parish Services, now the MSG Group, Ministerial Education and World and Home Missions. What we're trying to do is present a unified look to our all of our print pieces so that you can tell that they all came from the same place.
Sure.
I mean, it's just simply the corporate model, which
mm-hmm.
is there's value in unity. In other words, we all want to look like we're, you know, we're from the same place and that we're on the same boat. We all have the same mission. We're all headed in the same direction.
Right.
I was just going to say a big component of that logo that you haven't specifically mentioned is the tagline, Christ Love Our Calling. And it's exciting to see that message so plainly stated there, and something that we didn't have with our old logo. There was no tagline like that.
Yeah, and Sally, thanks for that, because I didn't mean to overlook that. But that's a huge component of that. And in fact, before we just labeled ourselves as Wells. And then people would ask, well, what does that mean? Well, that stands for the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod, which to you and me, it means something, because we understand what all of those words mean. But again, if you're trying to, you know, reach out to a wider audience, that may not communicate something, at least not right away, whereas Christ Love Our Calling does. You know, in that little phrase, you can go, oh, that's obviously a Christian organization and they stand for something, whereas, you know, it takes us a while to explain what Wells means. And there's a time and a place, obviously, for explaining what Wells stands for. But maybe not right in your first conversation with somebody, because that may be a little bit more too difficult to do.
Mm-hmm. A natural question is, why is a new website, or even a logo for that matter, good for our churches and schools? Why does it matter to them?
Well, I think as part of, if you take it as part of this overall positive identity that we're trying to establish, I think every congregation and every school can benefit from being part of a larger organization that has a positive message.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this over and over again, I think we're stronger together than we are individually.
Mm-hmm.
And so to do that, well, one of the ways you do that is by establishing, like I said, this real positive identity that says something in positive terms about what we are. We're about the love of Christ,
sure,
and we're offering that love to the world. There's no more positive message than that. So why wouldn't you, as a local congregation or as a school, want to be able to tap into that to say we're part of this larger organization,
mm-hmm, right,
that has a you know, the most positive message the world's ever known?
Sure. The an interesting part of the old site, and I still see it's a part of the new site, is the Q&A. Hugely popular there, and we've retained it here, but maybe with a little bit different focus. Has that changed a little bit?
Yeah, and we're still getting a lot of questions about that, because we're still in the process of revamping that whole thing. In fact, last I checked, we have not posted any new questions and answers
right.
yet, although this week that's coming. My understanding is this week those questions will once again start flowing.
Well, the questions never stop flowing. The answers that are
the questions keep coming in. The answers have not been as immediate as we would like them to be, but they're coming. The focus for that is, in fact, changing a little bit, which is, again, if you're trying to reach out to a wider audience, there are just certain questions that may not particularly be appropriate. And I guess in this forum, I'm more comfortable talking about
right.
that. But I guess, you know, like our approach has always been that we look at the look at our website sort of as a first date. You're going on a first date, and there are certain things you just don't bring up with somebody on that first date.
If you want a second one.
If you want a second one, exactly. And that's what we want, is
right.
a second and a third and a fourth date with somebody so they come back and get to know us. So there are just certain questions, and I'm not going to pick out particular examples, but as we even go through the archive, for instance, there are just many, many questions that put you on the defensive right away.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, the COP, Conference of Presidents, has expressed some concern about, you know, there are obviously people who are posing questions that maybe didn't get the answer that they liked from their own pastor, and
right.
now they're trying to get a second opinion so
right.
they can go back, well, look what he says,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And then that puts local pastors on the defensive, and we don't want to do that. So what we want to be able to do is accept those questions that have as wide appeal as possible, that don't appear to have hidden agendas, for that matter, that really stand to put us give us an opportunity to share a message of law and gospel and put us in the best positive light possible. Our goal is to, and we've had a number of questions about, well, what happened to the old archive? There was a lot of great stuff in there. And I agree, there is a lot of great stuff in there, but also mixed in with all of that is any number of questions that just are sort of off the mark in terms
mm-hmm.
of what we're trying to accomplish. We're going to have to take some time and go through those, cull out the best of those questions, add those to the archive. But of course, that takes time and effort and energy, and you know,
right.
and you know, we're so stretched thin as it is. But you know, that's our goal, is to get through those eventually.
Yeah, we've had a lot of feedback on Q&A over the years, and one is it's a deep theological resource. So we're not going to get rid of, you know, any of the questions. I think we'll post the ones that don't make it to Wells.net on Connect.
Yeah, that's our intent, is because those questions there, and there are very many, many questions in that archive, for instance, that are appropriate for that address deeper theological concerns, and that would be the place for them, because that would be the audience that has the spiritual maturity, for
right.
instance, to be able to digest those questions,
context,
put it
right.
in context, and have value. So that's the point that we want to get to, but it's going to take some work until we're there.
Mm-hmm.
Just one more mention from the homepage. I noticed that there's a daily devotion still prominently available there on the homepage, and that's just a wonderful resource. I think the Evangelism Office actually heads up that effort to provide those daily devotions, and I'm glad to see it's retained on the new website.
Well, yeah, and that was, again, as we analyzed all of this, we did, you know, take a close look at the what was getting hits and what wasn't on the old site, and said, okay, there are some things here that definitely need to make that migration. Of course, devotions were one of them, and I'm just thankful to Mike Hintz and his group over there in evangelism that they're willing to share those with us, and that they haven't seen those as the exclusive property of, for
mm-hmm.
instance, What About Jesus? What About Jesus continues in its form, and we you know, are sharing a lot of the same content there.
So we're in beta right now still. What needs to be done yet to call this launched or, you know, finished product?
Well, I think there's some technical things, obviously, with mm-hmm. our you know, our partner in this, in developing this, and in the construction of the site, the content management side of it. There's some things that need to be cleaned
mm-hmm.
up. I think really, and once we get those, I think we can pretty much say we're live. I think, to me, the bigger questions aren't so much when are we beta and when we're not. Some of the bigger questions that I have are, how do we continue to maintain
sure.
and bring in an audience as we go forward? You know, we have limited resources here. We're highly dependent upon, and also with the refocusing, for instance, of parish services, in which those groups aren't necessarily going to be in the business of producing content specifically for the people in the pew anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That really puts an added burden on the communication staff to try and find other sources for new content. And so we're in the middle of analyzing all of that right now. You'll see, for instance, throughout the site request, hey, do you have a story? Send it in.
Right.
That's not by accident. It's because we're looking for content and want to be able to create new content on the site and add new content on the site that's new and fresh and all that sort of stuff. And, I mean, that's the obvious rules and I mean, that's the way a website operates.
Sure.
I mean, if you want to get continue to get an audience, you got to keep putting up new content. So
yep.
That's going to be the real struggle moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Always, yeah, keeping it fresh. So if somebody wants to get in touch with the communication services office, has ideas about the website, constructive criticisms.
Absolutely.
Right? there is a contact us link I noticed at the top of the page, which I would assume that form, that information gets back to you.
Yeah, it gets back to us, yeah.
Not that you'll respond to everybody, but I think you're always looking for ways to improve it. And, you know, keeping in mind that this is a tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
For people to use as far as they reach out and can direct people to this site and say, hey, this is what we're about.
Exactly.
Okay. Joel, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Sure. Glad to be here.
Thanks again to Joel for spending that time with us. Very interesting as we're looking at different ways to communicate and some of the more popular things on Wells.net, like the Q&A, for instance.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent site, and we've just notched it up a level with the new presentation, the new software, allowing us to do more and reach out to more people.
Yep. All right, on to news in the tech world. Sally, what's happening out there?
Well, you can tell that the end of the year is approaching, Martin, because the awards and culmination kind of things are coming out in the news. This week we heard about the dictionary Word of the Year had a techie bent to it. I thought it was kind of interesting. Unfriend was reported to be the new dictionary Word of the Year. It beat out hashtag and netbook as being the most interesting word to be added this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that friend and unfriend have become verbs in our language now. So
I didn't know friend was a verb. I guess even in non-technical circles, maybe you could construe it as such. But Facebook obviously has made that very popular, and then thus the word unfriend. Although I've never heard anybody really use that, and I don't unfriend people on Facebook.
I think that it's happening out there.
You know, bet it is.
You need to friend someone, and it's kind of visual. When you friend someone, you get notified and that kind of thing. But maybe you can follow them for a while and then decide you don't want to be tuned into them as closely and unfriend them.
So when you unfriend somebody in Facebook, do they get a notification they've been unfriended?
No, no they don't.
Oh, that's good.
It's okay. To be figured out.
It can be
out
a silent shun. Okay.
Exactly.
All of a sudden, you're dead to me. You don't exist in my Facebook world. Okay.
That's the social media world we live in.
No kidding. All right.
The other one that we saw pop up in the news this week was from the Webby's Award. And the Webby's is an annual award process where they recognize the best websites that are out there. And they put together something most influential internet moments of the decade. So this is a list of the top 10 things that they say have influenced our lives because of the internet in this past decade. And it starts with Craigslist and moves all the way through Napster, Google going public with their IPO, Facebook opening up in 2006, the iPhone in 2007, and even most recently the Iranian election protest this year.
Mm-hmm.
So an interesting list to kind of look back and see how the internet has shaped our history in this decade.
And I would dare to say that the most influential moments, not just internet moments of the decade, would include a lot of internet types of things, because it's become really a part of the fabric of our society.
Right, an expectation, a communication channel that's kind of blown everything up. We talked about it in Here Comes Everybody with the many examples he gave there.
Yep.
Definitely had an influence.
Let's move to picks of the week. Sally, I assume you have a pick as usual.
Well, I do. I was doing a lot of research on RSS this week for our discussion topic. Came across an interesting page on the Apple website, and it's related to iTunes, and it's basically a way to generate your own custom RSS feed of content that's a part of iTunes.
Mm.
So you go to this page and you pick your country, you pick your media type, and I'm just going to refresh my page. It's not responding. There you go. You can choose between music, podcast, audiobooks, iTunes applications. So if you're a fan of applications in iTunes, and then you can pick different feed types, like if you choose applications, you can choose free applications or paid applications. Under podcast, top podcast is available. And sometimes you're allowed to pick genres. So if you're interested specifically on kids and family podcasts, for instance, it will give you an RSS feed. And as new things are added, you'll be alerted to it via your RSS feed. So just a real customized RSS feed that you can view and generate for your own personal enjoyment and, you know, for perusing the iTunes store for new content.
So here's the answer to our Grits question. You could create an RSS feed that would scan iTunes for anything that comes up. So if there's a Grits iPhone app, you would see that. A new Grits song, that would come out in your feed. You could stay up to date.
I think that I'll do that, Martin, just so I can prove to you how popular Grits are.
Okay. I'm looking forward to that report. All right. Thanks for that pick, Sally. My pick is actually something that's in the news as well. Just this past week, Microsoft launched another beta product, their Office 2010 software suite. It includes Outlook and Microsoft Word and Excel and PowerPoint and a few other goodies. From what I can read, this beta is going to be available or not expire at least until next October. So this for an entire year, you can try this software out, similar to what they did for Windows 7. I downloaded it the other day and have really been liking the changes that have been made, especially to Outlook. They've cleaned up the interface. They've added conversations, kind of like Gmail does. They have integrated a lot of things onto one page where, you know, I spend a lot of my time in Outlook, and so I like to see as much of my calendar and my task list as possible, and the integration between all of those is really nice. And they're going to be loading it up with some social networking tools as well, so that if you've got a contact, you can see all of the things that are related to that person, their Facebook posts, LinkedIn, and so on and so forth. That's not quite ready, although that should be coming here soon as they get further along in the beta process. We'll put a link in the show notes how to get the beta. It's about a 700 megabyte download, and you need a product key. And I'm not sure how long they're going to make these available, so if you're interested in checking that out. One thing that you can't do, and I would suggest that you be careful in its use, is run it alongside a 2007 or 2003 installation of Office. So you have to uninstall one and reload the other. So just be careful with your data if you're going to do that. And but if you're interested in it, give it a try, or try it on a different machine that you like to play around with, and give feedback to Microsoft. But I think they're heading in the right direction. It's a nice product.
I'm looking forward to the web-based version.
Mm-hmm.
I think 2010 is supposed to have a web.
It integrates with that, right?
Mm-hmm. So that'll be good too.
All right, community feedback.
Well, we heard from lots of people this week, Martin, starting with Steve Mathwick, who wrote us a really nice email. He has joined the Google Wave, and it was kind of funny because he said he's excited to be in Google Wave, and he has a leg up on his son, who's a programmer. So that's the kind of treats you get when you tune into the Wells Tech podcast. So I got a kick out of that.
Yes.
He is using Jing, which is a free screencasting software from TechSmith, and it's helped him to train another member of his congregation to upload their sermon audio on their Final Web website. And they do their sermon audio using Audacity. So he's struck a home run there with all the different Wells Tech recommendations. So that's really great to hear, Steve, and we really appreciate the feedback.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Next up, John Shoesmith sent us a link that I think a lot of people will find interesting. It is a Silverlight version of an ancient Bible called the, Martin?
Codex Sinaiticus. Sinaiticus. I butchered
and,
that.
it's an Old and New Testament, purported to be the oldest Bible in existence with both the Old mm-hmm. and New Testament. So it's really impressive to view it in the Silverlight interface. And there's actually a lot of other books that are available. I think they come from the University of Oxford, where they've digitized these books. You can have some of it read to you. It's really an impressive website. So check that out. And thanks, John, for sharing that with
us. Nice use of the technology. I'm very impressed.
Yeah. We heard from Ryan Rosenthal. Actually, I got an email forwarded that he subscribes to an e-newsletter from Simple K through 12. And the e-newsletter is called Simple Tech Integration. And their goal is actually to share ideas of using technology in the classroom. And they kind of compile these from tweets that they've encountered throughout the week or whatever and put out this e-newsletter.
Yeah.
On a weekly basis. So you can follow them on Twitter at SimpleK12. And if you're interested, you can visit their website and subscribe to their newsletter. Thanks, Ryan, for sending that.
Appreciate that.
We also had an email from Pastor John Rudot, who was listening to our last show where we talked about Rob Gunther's Google site. Pastor Gunther set up a Google site for his church, Gethsemane. I think it's in North Carolina. And I probably read the URL wrong, and he needed some clarification on that. But the URL is actually Gethsem, GETHSEM.info, instead of the full church name, Gethsemane. It's just the first part of the name, Gethsem. So check that out at Gethsem.info, and you can figure out how he set up his Google site and potentially make use of one in your congregation as well.
Very good.
We had some Twitter feedback from Jason Schmidt. He's always sharing great stuff with us on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Jason serves as a teacher at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska, and there were several great links he shared, a link to a Google Wave cheat sheet, a Web 2.0 backpack, which is a web-based application specifically for students.
Yep.
So great
digital
list there.
Digital backpack, yes.
He shared a link to the official Google blog announcement where they are talking about automation of captioning on YouTube videos. And this is a big breakthrough in the closed captioning arena. They're going to apply their Google Voice translation technology to YouTube videos. And I had read about this a week or two ago. They were starting in Europe with this, but it looks like very quickly it's going to move over to the U.S. and we'll begin to see closed captioning automatically generated on our YouTube videos. So
that'll
that's
be
real exciting.
That'll be very interesting to watch, because I don't know about you, Sally, but when I look at my Google Voice translations, they ain't very good. So we'll see how, if they've improved the technology to do these. But boy, that is really going to be revolutionary if they can fine tune that and make that into something that's accurate, more accurate than Google Voice is now. And I'm thinking just for searchability, that would make the web and multimedia content searchable, which really increases the value of a search engine.
Absolutely, and of course that's what Google's all about. Mm-hmm. And so you can see the writing on the wall there with that one. That'll be exciting to see.
Yep.
Jason also tweeted a link to Google Tools for Schools, which is a page put together specifically with schools in mind. It has links for training and implementation, for Google for Educators, Google Teacher Academy, all kinds of great Google links oriented to school usage. And finally, he shared a link to audible.com. Martin, I know you're an Audible fan, a great resource for downloading audio books to listen to on an MP3 player. And they are actually giving away a free audio book through Thanksgiving Day. So if you happen to listen to the podcast before the end of day Thanksgiving, November 26, 2009, check out this link that Jason shared, and you can get a free book from audible.com.
Well worth it. Those are, you know, those are between $10 and $20 sometimes, so great value.
I had a few things to share on Twitter as well. Wanted to mention them here. I found a Google cheat sheet specifically oriented to teens, so written in real easy to understand language for teens, and it's all about Google search, how to, you know, refine your search terms and use different characters and things in your search to get different results. So check that out. My friend David Allen, who runs the Getting Things Done initiative. At his website, davidallen.com, he shared free GTD resources that are available. And it's just a whole slew of them, actually, on the GTD blog that they run there at David Allen Company. So check out the free GTD resources.
He just a side note to that, he has a Twitter feed, as you might imagine. I think it's GTD is the tag. Well, worth following if you are a Getting Things Done fan. He does have some tips and resources that he would point people to. He's an interesting guy. I had a chance to meet him last year and chatted with him about a few things. And the way his mind thinks is kind of insightful about time management. So it's and you can see in reading his books that there's a very systematic way he approaches productivity, and it certainly has helped me.
Very good. Last thing that I tweeted was 12 ways to publish slideshows online. And it's actually geared towards students publishing and sharing their slideshows. Interesting comment there was, teachers don't expect you to turn in your work anymore. They expect you to publish it so that they can view it online. Or that's where the expectations are moving, at least. And this is a really great list, not just for students, but for anyone who's doing any kind of presentations at all. Great exhaustive list of ways to do sharing online of those presentation resources.
Good.
And finally, from our Facebook page, Nancy Thompson added a link there on our Facebook wall that said ProPresenter 4 is now in public beta. So if you have version 3 of ProPresenter, which is, I believe, used for production in worship settings, then you can get the beta of ProPresenter 4 and give it a run for the money. I think the download is only good for 10 days, and then the beta turns into a pumpkin, apparently. But you can get a taste of what ProPresenter 4 has to offer with this public beta that's available currently.
Great. Thanks to all of our listeners for sharing. That's one of my favorite parts of the show. If you want to contribute your thoughts, ideas, suggestions, wellstech.wells.net is the website. wellstech@wells.net is our email. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, we would love to hear your voice. 405-4-WELLS. That's 405-367-9357. And, of course, you can tweet as Sally records all those, and we share those on the show. #WellsTech is the hashtag to use if you are a Twitterer. We had Nancy share on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/WellsTech. We're on Delicious, Digo, just use the WellsTech tag in both of those cases. And the ever-popular WellsTech listserv is always available. And if you've got tech questions, I can't think of a better place to ask it than there. Next week, Sally, what are we doing next week?
Well, we're excited.
Other than recovering from the food, the vast amounts of food that we probably shouldn't have eaten on Thanksgiving.
The turkey-induced coma.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to be joined by Gail Potratz from Emmanuel in New London, Wisconsin, for our monthly Tech in Education podcast. And next week we're going to be dedicating the show to specific examples of technology and religion curriculum. So if you are in charge of teaching religion, maybe Christ-like to kindergartners on up through catechism and adult religion education as well, we're going to try to hit on some practical examples, give you some links and things to share how you can use technology in the religious curriculum.
Very good. All right. Thanks again, Sally, for your many, many contributions. So do you have grits for Thanksgiving dinner?
Not for dinner, for breakfast, though.
Ah.
Can't start the day without them.
Okay. Just checking. All right. We appreciate everybody joining us, and we would welcome you back next week as Gail is joining us. Let's close the show with the music of In His Service. We've picked a Thanksgiving-appropriate song, Praise God, From Whom All Blessings Flow. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We're glad you did. Talk to you next week.